Okay, we're going to backtrack a little bit. Last week, we jumped ahead and spoke about one of the reasons, causes, given for the Shoah. But we related it pretty much to the last week's Sedra. This week, I want to go back and speak... is there an inyan at all, both hashkafically and practically, of trying to find reasons and causes for any tragedy, and the Holocaust included? So first let's mention that I saw a pamphlet once written by a... a hush of a person. I'm not going to mention who it is because what I'm going to say about it may border on Lashon Hara. But the person, from what I remember, and I really have to, I can't find the pamphlet, I'd like to read it again because maybe the person really meant something else. I'll tell you one second what could be. But my impression, what I remember the first time reading it through, was that he made the following position. That since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, it's impossible, it's useless to look for reasons in things that happen in history because we're in a time of Hester Ponim. And the way that he understood Hester Ponim was that God just is masking us, and there's no rhyme and reason anymore to history. We're in Gaulis. We are at the mercy of mikra, of total natural causes, and therefore there's no way or there's no need or no purpose in ascertaining reasons for things that happen. That's part of what Gaulis is. Gaulis is being Hefker. So things happen because we're Hefker. We are at the mercy of the forces of nature, which includes people's free choice. Remember when I read the pamphlet and when I commented on to somebody who gave it to me, that was my impression and that's what it seemed to that he had said. Thinking back over it, maybe he said something like, I can't find the pamphlet so I can reread it. But I'll tell you what a possibility is what he meant in a few seconds. If that's what he meant, though, that's apikursis. It's totally not right. And I'll bring you a few simple proofs to the fact. First of all, Purim is a holiday that we celebrate where there was definitely, Chazal say, reasons why Klal Yisrael deserved the scare, at least, of the Gzeira of Haman. Gemara speaks about why it happened, with opinions of Amoroyim, Tanoim, and Purim happened after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, when we were the Hester Ponim, in Gaulis Bavel. So if Hester Ponim means that we're just Hefker, and there's no way of finding reasons for tragedies, then the Gemaras that speak about Purim are all wrong. And obviously they're not. So that's one proof. In addition to that, there are countless examples of tragedies that happened in Jewish history in Gaulis, where the Chachamim of that generation looked for reasons and mentioned reasons. If they held that because we're in Gaulis and Hester Ponim, there's no way of finding reasons because there are no reasons, then all of that makes no sense. Example, Gzeiras Tach V'Tat, right? The Chmelnytsky pogroms that destroyed one-third of European Jewry. Gedolei Yisrael said reasons why those things happened. The son of the Shach and the Tosas Yontif were amongst those who came up with reasons why it happened and were masaking takonas to strengthen those things for the future. Now, they held that it's futile to find reasons in Gaulus because of Hester Pomin, then what they did was ridiculous. Same thing with Churban Bayis Sheni. Also was in the time of Hester Pomin. Because even Bayis Sheni was not, the Shechina didn't come back. The effects of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash were still there. There wasn't Shechina. And other, all the other things that were missing in Bayis Sheni, amongst them was Shechina. So, therefore, Chof Sivan, another time that the city of Nemirov was destroyed.
The Vilna Gaon explains the following. The Vilna Gaon says that there are various kinds of hashgacha that we experience. And they are the following. In the Midbar, the Hashgacha Hashem was Hashgacha Gluya, was open miracles. We needed food, man came down min Hashamay. Needed water, came out of a rock. People did Averas immediately, snakes were commissioned to decimate them, or fire came out of the heavens, or whatever. That's the Hashgacha of Nisim Gluya. You could see clearly the relationship openly between mitzvahs, averas, and nature. Then we came into Eretz Yisrael, and that was a different hashgacha, nisim nistarim, hidden miracles. But here again, you could still see the relationship between nature and mitzvahs and averas. Right? So in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, it rained. Water didn't come out of stones, but it rained if we kept mitzvahs. We didn't keep mitzvahs, it didn't rain. People would go to a Navi. If they had problems, even medical problems, and they were on the right Madrega, they didn't go to a doctor, they went to the Navi. The Navi told them why those problems are affecting them, and they did tshuva, and they lost things, they went to a Navi to find out why and where to find the things, right, if they did tshuva, and so on. This the Ramban says, are nisim nistarim. They're miracles, but they're hidden miracles. They happen in what appears to be a natural way, but they're miracles because cause and effect-wise, there's no connection between doing mitzvahs and it raining. There are other physical causes, but that's a miracle. It's a miracle that's hidden. That's nisim nistarim. And then, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, was Hester Pomin. You couldn't see any relationship, rarely, between mitzvahs and averas and natural causes. It seemed like things were happening naturally without any connection to spiritual things. That the physical world worked on its own. That's called Hester Pomin. Says the Vilna Gaon, from God's standpoint, there's absolutely no difference between any of these things. The Ribbono Shel Olam rules the world the same, whether it's Nisim Gluyim or it's Hester Pomin. It doesn't say that God is Mafkaras, just hides his face. It's all from our standpoint, how we see it. When there's Nisim Gluyim, we see clearly the connection in an open way. When it's Nisim Nistarim, we see the connection in a hidden way. When it's Hester Pomin, we don't see the connection. That doesn't mean it's not there. It's there, but it's hidden. That the only difference in Hashgacha, says the Vilna Gaon, is from our standpoint, but not from the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam standpoint is all the same. Now I want to explain that was the mistake of the Meraglim. That was what Chazal call Atzas Meraglim. Atzas Meraglim is not that the Meraglim plotted to bring back a bad report about Eretz Yisrael. It's not what it is at all. So there's a lot of proof. In fact, in some Midrashim, instead of Atzas Meraglim, it says Atzas Hador Hazeh. The plot, the philosophy of this generation. And the Kitzer, what I explained is the following. And it seems to have a lot of support in many, many Midrashim. That's the following. Klal Yisrael this is the mistake they made, and this was what Moshe Rabbeinu tried to avoid by sending the Meraglim. And the Klal Yisrael knew that when they'll come into Eretz Yisrael, the Hashkoch is going to change. And that instead of Nisim Gluyim, it's things going to happen to Derech HaTeva. And they understood that to mean that if it's happening to Derech HaTeva, they're in control. God has given the control over to cause and effect. And whatever they can cause, that they can control, will cause the effect. So it's as if the Ribbono Shel Olam relinquished his control over the world and gave it over to nature. And in nature, there are things that people can control. So they understood that when they come into Eretz Yisrael, just like they're going to have to plant and plow and going to have to fight wars, they're in control. And that was a mistake. Because even though things will happen to Derech HaTeva, it only appears to be like that. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still controlling the world. He didn't give up and relinquish his control over the world. It's just that it looks to us as if there's a cause and effect naturally. But it's not cause and effect at all. We have to do our shtapas. But we don't make the effect. We just make and fulfill a condition, a prerequisite. After that, the Ribbono Shel Olam does and creates the effect. You don't make a living. That's a toast. People don't make a living. They fulfill a condition of going to work. And the Ribbono Shel Olam gives them a living. It's pretty obvious if you think about it that it can't be cause and effect. A person goes and digs ditches. 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, and he gets a paycheck for it. Is there any real cause and effect between him digging ditches and getting that paycheck? Right? Because he dug the ditch, that creates the money? Nothing at all. Except his employer will pay him for digging the ditches. But whether the employer pays him or not is not guaranteed either. The employer may drop dead, he may go bankrupt, he may be a goner. He may never get the paycheck. So the fact that you dug those ditches and you got a job doesn't guarantee that there's going to be an effect. In the end, there's so many factors that are not in your control that obviously the Ribbono Shel Olam is the one who provides you with your living. Except you have to do a prerequisite. You have to, what you call, fulfill a condition. You fulfill that condition, then the Ribbono Shel Olam, if he chooses so, will reward your fulfilling that prerequisite with a result. If not, not. But that's the way the world works. But in any case, it's not that you're the cause. You just are fulfilling a condition. That's the way it's going to be. The people didn't understand that, and they understood that they were the ones who were in charge. So they said, look, you know, we know that when we get to Eretz Yisrael, things are going to be different. Things aren't going to happen miraculously. So we want to send spies and start doing what we're supposed to do, what we're supposed to now be in control. Or at least, they were right, or at least make our shtablis. One of the two. Right? But they understood the shtablis to mean cause. When it's not cause, it's only prerequisite. So, Moshe Rabbeinu went to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the Ribbono Shel Olam said to him, I can't command you to send Meraglim. That would defeat the whole purpose of what they want to do. They want to get started now on this new Hashgacha. In the new Hashgacha, you don't come and ask God what to do. That's not Nisim the story. That's Nisim Gluyim. What do you do when things are the Nisim the story? You come and ask the Nabi. You come and ask the God. What should you do? And he tells you, I'll pee his Das Torah. I'll pee Nevuah. So therefore, I'm not going to tell you Moshe Rabbeinu to send spies. If you want to send them, send them. I agree. Maybe they should get started on that new Hashgacha since they're ready to come into Eretz Yisrael. So it's not that the Ribbono Shel Olam told them it's a bad idea, don't do it. He just told them that the reason they want to do it preempts my getting involved openly. So Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the people had this false philosophy. That was Atzos Meraglim, the Atzos of sending Meraglim, Atzos Ador Hazeh, with the feeling that they're in control. And he felt that if he tells them they can't send the Meraglim, that's going to be even worse. Rashi says that later. They're going to say you're hiding something. So he agreed to send them, hoping that the following result would come from it. The problem was like this. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam promised they would conquer Eretz Yisrael. Right? He assured them they're going to conquer Eretz Yisrael. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam told them it was going to happen the Derech HaTeva. Now they would go and they would see that it's impossible for them to affect that the Derech HaTeva. So they have to come to one of two conclusions. Either God lied to us. God said it's going to happen the Derech HaTeva, and God said it's going to happen, and we see it can't be. So obviously, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam lied to us, and we're not going to be able to do it. And that's what they said, Ki chazak hu mimenu, that it's even to God, they're even stronger than God. And were they foolish? They thought that these seven nations were stronger than God? But God tied his hands. God himself said, it's going to happen the Derech HaTeva. And the Derech HaTeva, we can't do it. And therefore, God has tied his hands, and the Taka is stronger than God. Wasn't foolish. According to their mistake, it made sense. But what the conclusion they should have come to is, look, God said it's going to happen. God said it's going to happen the Derech HaTeva. We can't cause it, the Derech HaTeva. Conclusion is, the Derech HaTeva doesn't mean that we cause it. God's going to do it. There's going to be hidden miracles. But we have to do our part. But we're not the ones who are going to cause it. That's the conclusion they should have come to. But Lameister, they came to the other conclusion. Now, why didn't just Moshe Rabbeinu call them together on a Wednesday night in the Norden's home and give them a shiur and tell them what I'm telling you? The answer is very simple. All of you, including me, so now we know it. So, we all believe that, right? That what's it called? That even in a case where it's Derech HaTeva, we're not the cause. We believe it, we know it, we heard it, but do we really believe it? Meaning, do we still act as if we're the cause? When you go to the doctor, you still think it's a doctor. When you, what's it called? When you earn a living, do you still think that it's you? Or do you really, really believe you're only fulfilling a condition? Right? I would say that all of us, without exception, right, deep down still feel, right, that it's us. Right? Say and believe whatever you want, but when it comes down to it, right, we may believe it, but there's still something there that tells us we're the ones who are doing it. You have to be on a tremendously high level, not just to believe it, but really to believe it. I'm not saying we don't believe it. We believe it. But there's a difference between believing something on a level of theoretical and really putting it into practice. And really putting it into practice is 90%, 80%, 10%, whatever it is, each person. So Moshe could have given them the biggest Moshe shmooze. And they would have agreed, or whatever. But it's still, down, deep down, there was that feeling that it's not just a prerequisite, I am doing. And in order to get that out, they had to go through the motions of seeing it for themselves. And then maybe it would have made an impression. So he let them go. And he was hoping. That's why he said, there's conflicting Midrashim. Some Midrashim say that only 10, or all Midrashim say, only 10 of them took fruit in the end. Okay? Only the 10 that came back with the bad report. Yoshua and Kalev didn't take fruit. So one Midrash says, 10 of them took fruit, and Yoshua and Kalev didn't take, because they weren't part of that Eitzah. They weren't part of the plot. That means that taking the fruit was bad. It's part of the plot. Simple. They came back and they said, the fruit is so different, the people are also different. The fruit's big, the people are giant. Simple. Then there's another Medrash that says that the 10 Meraglim didn't want to take fruit. Didn't want to take it. And Yoshua and Kalev took out their swords and they said, either you take the fruit or we're going to kill you or you're going to kill us. They forced them to take the fruit. So which is it? the proof was something they had to do, and Yeshua and Kalev were involved in making sure they took the proof, or Yeshua and Kalev didn't take proof because they weren't part of the Eitz. Beyond that, no matter what you say, the Torah says the Moshe told them to take the fruit. How could it be that the fruit was part of the Eitz HaRah? Moshe told them, "Mishchazakim lekachtim mipri haaretz," they should take the fruit. So we understand it as the following. The fruit was the biggest nesoyim, taking that fruit, because it was the biggest proof that they were in control, that they made a mistake. But they could use that in a very negative way. In other words, you could fool yourself into thinking that you're in control of everything, except one thing, agriculture, because you need rain. And there's no way that people can produce rain, even today. So with all the planting, plowing, whatever, it doesn't rain, everything goes to waste. So you could come with one of two conclusions from that. You have you're hit between the eyes that you can't control everything. Either you can come to the conclusion, therefore nature doesn't mean I'm in control. It means that the Rebbeinu Shem is still in control and I'm just doing what I have to do. Or you could come to the conclusion, nature means that I have to be in control. And here is a very dangerous thing. If you still needed to be convinced, Moshe Rabbeinu said, if you still need the chizuk, if you're still not 100% convinced that you're not the one in control, and the Rebbeinu Shem is still in control, and you're just doing your prerequisite, then take the fruit. It can't hurt. It can't make things any worse. It can only make them better. Then take the fruit. But if you don't need that chizuk, if you're already convinced, then leave the fruit alone. Because the fruit could be an Nisayon that could push you the other way. If you need it, you know what it's like? The Rishonim say whether a person should be involved in philosophy, in the philosophical proofs of God. So what they say basically is somebody who needs those proofs, and without that will have Sfeikus and Emuna, for him it can't hurt. Because if he doesn't dabble in these things, he's maybe going to go up the derech anyway. So this can only make it better, can't make it worse. But somebody doesn't need that. He has Emuna because of Mesorah, whatever. And these questions don't bother him. To start dabbling in it could make things worse, could bring him off the derech if he doesn't understand these things properly. Same thing over here. Don't get involved with the philosophical implications of the fruit and rain if you don't need it. But if you need it, these chazaktem ulakaftem yipriharis. Therefore, both Mephoshim are right. Yeshua and Kalev were convinced, and therefore taking the fruit didn't apply to them. Only the Ishazakim. The other 10, on the other hand, weren't convinced. And for them, Moshe Rabbeinu said, then take the fruit. So they forced them to take the fruit, even though they themselves didn't take it. So both Midrashim are right. And it all fits in with what Moshe Rabbeinu said. In any case, that was the Chet HaMeraglim. Chet HaMeraglim is that if it's going to happen naturally, then we have to cause it, and if we can't cause it, it can't happen, and therefore they gave up hope in the midpoint. And the tikkun of that is that's crying. They cried. They gave up hope. The tikkun for that is crying on Tisha B'Av. Well, we come to the same reasoning with a different conclusion. We come to the reasoning that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam promised to take us out of Golus. We can't do it on our own. And therefore, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam got to do it. So instead of giving up hope, person realizes he's not in control, then he has emuna that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam really is in charge. And behind the scenes, he's the one who does everything, even though we're not capable of bringing that effect through our natural causes. And God will make it happen. He'll make it look natural. That's what Rebbeinu Shel Olam is doing. So therefore, this idea that by Hester punning, there's no rhyme and reason. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam relinquishes his hashkafa, according to the Vilna Gaon, for sure, is not true. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam is involved, hashkafa-wise, in every level, right, of hashkafa. Even Hester Pani. It's only that he hides his face, it's not that he's mocked to us. So if that's what that person meant, it's totally off base. Now I'm thinking, not now, but it's bothered me already for a while. I'm really looking for that pamphlet to reread it. Maybe he meant something else. Maybe he meant that, yes, there are reasons, but we're not capable, since it's Hester Ponim and everything is hidden, we're not capable of ascertaining those reasons. Right? In other words, there are reasons, and it could be when they were great, Gedolim or whatever, they could ascertain the reasons, but in our generation, we don't have people of the caliber that could decipher the Hester Ponim. Not that there's no reason, but we see from history that in each generation there were people who attempted to find reason, even till, what's it called, a few hundred years ago by the expulsion from Spain and other things that happened since then. So it seems like Gedolei Yisrael didn't hold of this even on that level. You still, right, since there are reasons, right, even though we don't have Nevi'im, we can look for reasons. We didn't yet explain in what context to look for those reasons. We'll see there are right context and wrong context. But at least that there's the idea that you can look for reasons and causes does apply, despite the fact that there's Hester Ponim on both counts. One is there are reasons, and even though there's Hester Ponim, there's still an idea to try to ascertain what possible causes could be, because there's a purpose to that too, which we'll get to in a few seconds.
Maybe he meant
that
after an individual could never find out
what
happened to him, why it happened to him.
Yeah, he's talking about the Holocaust. He's talking about the Holocaust in general. The pamphlet was written about looking for reasons for the Holocaust.
I saw a pamphlet, I think he was saying that an individual could no longer know.
Yeah.
But the community you could, like Kriya Shema, again, he spread out a Rashi. First paragraph talks about the individual, and it doesn't talk about the mitzvah, reward, or punishment.
Right.
But the second paragraph tells of the Rabbin, there, you do a mitzvah, you get reward, you get the very get punished. And there he was preparing the Holocaust. For the individual, you couldn't
know. Okay, I don't know if it's the same pamphlet, because according to that reasoning, then the tzibur should be able to find reasons. And the pamphlet I saw was trying to explain that anyone who looks for causes of the Holocaust may be a mistake. Can't find causes of the Holocaust. Okay. In addition to that, Lechora, the Gemara is mashma not like that. Gemara was basically written, or a lot of the members, is after Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Surely after Chorban Beis Rishon. And the Gemara says that if a person sees Yisurin coming on him, Yifashpesh Kamais of him, he should look for reasons, causes, that would have caused those sars. And that's what the Rambam says. So we're not only talking about things that happened to the Tzibor, things that even happened to a Yachid. Culture came to Tzibor. So on all counts it seems like this philosophy, either that you can't, there are no reasons, or you can't find reasons, and therefore there's no reason to speculate, doesn't exist. So if that's the case, so then there are ideas of looking for reasons. In what context? So the idea basically is the following. Since we don't have Nevi'im, and since no one can say for sure why something happened or didn't happen, therefore you can't point the finger and accuse people, right, that they did this and that's why they suffered. That's absurd. So the reasons we're going to find are not to, what's it called, what's the word, accuse? No.
Condemn.
Condemn. Okay, that's a good word. Condemn the people who were killed in the Holocaust, that they were guilty of these things that we're going to find. That's absurd, especially when it comes to individuals, but even as a nation. We don't know. We don't know that these were the, what's it called, the reasons. Beyond that, Rav Shach, I think, or Rav Huttner also held like that, that you can't find specific reasons that would apply to that generation, because the Holocaust, as well as other kinds of tragedies, don't happen because of one generation. They are the accumulation of many generations. And therefore, you can't look at only one generation and try to find its weaknesses and attribute that to the cause. There is a cause. But it's an accumulation of over generations. So it has to be something that doesn't only apply to that one specific generation. It's part of the whole gullus. So it's a whole pattern. So therefore that limits trying to find altogether, because you can't just look at what's in front of you. You have to look at the accumulation of generations, which is very difficult for anybody to see. That still doesn't mean that you don't look for reasons, but not again to ascertain that that's why it happened and that's what these people were guilty of. That's for sure not proper.
We do have sometimes that the reasons aren't given. A show, for example, Lashon Hara was sad.
Yeah, but that's again, that's what you're seeing in a second, what that means. That's not to say that you're saying for sure these people spoke Lashon Hara and that's why the show broke down. What it is in the following context only. That is, what can we learn from that tragedy that we should get chiseled? You can't say for sure that's why it happened. You can't say those people are guilty of what, right? But since this is a possibility, I'm doing that so I can learn not to repeat those kinds of things so tragedies in the future don't happen. It's a chizuk for the people looking for the reasons, not something that ascertains why the people who suffered, suffered. It's not for the past, it's for the future. That's the only thing. Beyond that, it's only for people who therefore can get a chizuk from it. But to tell people who can't get a chizuk, where the only result is going to be of condemning the people of the past, there's not going to be any positive thing for the future, just the opposite. It may make things worse for the future for those people, and for those people you're not allowed to tell them that altogether. Example. There's a medrash. Chevre Iyuv came to him, and they said to him, he was suffering, and they said, Yiras HaKislos. You probably are not as big a Yirei Shamayim as you appear to be. Your Yirei Shamayim is probably to a certain degree false. Okay? They were punished, Chevre Iyuv, for Onas Dvarim, for hurting Iyuv's feelings. Okay. Now the Chora, they were right. Iyuv must have done something. Things don't happen just like this. There must be a reason why things like that happen. Okay? So, well, what did they do wrong? They were ma'orer Iyuv to do tshuva, to make a cheshbon ha-nefesh, right? They said, you're probably not the Yirei Shamayim. There's two problems. One is, how could you say that so clearly? Maybe not. Maybe there's other reasons why tzaras happen. It's not that it doesn't happen for any reason. Maybe the tzaras happened like they really did as an assayant for Iyuv, not because of something that he did in the past. Not because he's not a big Yirei Shamayim. He is a Yirei Shamayim, but the Rebbe Hashem is testing him. Or the Rebbe Hashem is giving him Yisurim Shalava. There are other possibilities. None of them are that it happened just like this. There's a purpose. But why did they assume that the purpose was a punishment when maybe it wasn't a punishment? Maybe it was a chizuk. Maybe it was an assayant, which in fact it was. So that's one thing. Secondly, it says you don't try to comfort a person, b'shas shemei samuch lefanav. There's a time when a person can make a cheshbon ha-nefesh, and there's a time when it's impossible. You don't come to a person in the hospital who's suffering and tell him, why don't you make a cheshbon, he probably did something wrong, and you know, that's not the time. The time is when he gets out of the hospital, he's recuperating, then maybe he can handle it. Can't handle it, b'shas the tzara itself. After the person's buried, you come and comfort a person and tell them to make a cheshbon ha-nefesh. You don't do it at the funeral. So, Iyuv's friends came in the heat of his tzar, and they started telling him things that he couldn't handle. That stam onas dvarim, which is not going to have any positive effect, it's just going to make a person feel bad, that's awesome. Therefore, what happened, I think we mentioned it, but I'm going to mention a little bit more. Quite a few years ago here, there was a train accident where a train hit a school bus, and kids were killed from the, not from the Frum community. And at that time, there were theaters, I think, in Petah Tikva, whatever, that were opening on Shabbos, and there were all kinds of protests, or maybe it was somebody else, I don't remember where it was now. The whole Indian of Chil Shabbos, that plague of Chil Shabbos, Bar Hesia, that was plaguing various cities in Eretz Yisrael. And supposedly, subsequently, I saw that that Roth denied ever saying this, and that the media made it up, distorted it, years later. But at the time, supposedly, a very harsh of a Roth said publicly, the reason why these children were killed was because of the Chil Shabbos that's going on. Truth is, that may be true. Maybe it's not something out of the realm of possibility. How that works is not to discuss now, right? It doesn't mean that the Rabbanu Shlom killed children who were innocent because other people were in the Chil Shabbos. Those children had their cheshbon why they had to leave this world the way they did. They came into the world to leave the world the way they did, especially the Shabbos. But why did God make it happen in such a way that it affected the Tzibur the way Tzibur was affected because of Chil Shabbos? Could be. I don't know. Not enough. I don't know. That was the reason. But saying that to Gedolei Yisrael, that they should be mechazik themselves in Shmir Shabbos would have been fine. Saying it to a secular public that don't have the wherewithal to not only not accept that, but even understand it, and only leads to making people less from, more angry at God, is no purpose at all. That's from Nastavar. Especially since this Rav wasn't a Navi and couldn't say for sure. The only tachlis is not to pronounce why it happened, but what we can gain from it, what we can learn to be mechazik. Telling it to people who can't handle that and will not be mechazik anything, just the opposite, it's totally awesome. And I heard that Scheinberg, somebody told me, another Israeli gadol, also had the same reaction. Two different things, similar things. Somebody got up and said, this has happened because of this. Scheinberg got up and he said, you're not a Navi, not allowed to say such things, or whatever. Not that it couldn't be, but that's not the form. That's not the context in which it was said. So that, for sure, who it's said to and what context is very important. But there could be causes. The causes could be things that we can speculate about, but not to condemn the people who died, but to use as a chizuk for the future to people who can handle it. Under those circumstances, there are those conditions, there are those that hold that you can look for causes for the Holocaust as well as any other tragedy, and utilize them the way that we said, but not out of that context.
How can you learn from something if you don't know that that's really what the Indian was?
Because you don't have to know for sure. That's a possibility, and I can use that as a chizuk. Why not? Why not? A person has yisurim. Right? He's not sure 100% why, but I can take a chizuk from that and be mechazik myself, because it's a possibility. And if this is a possibility, and here's something that I can attach to that possibility, something that's more than me, use it as a source. Why not? An example. What? It is. I'm connecting it. I know that this is a possibility. I don't know if this is what happened or not. But I know it's a possibility. These kinds of things can cause things like this. It's possible that I can relate this to that. I don't know for sure, so I can't condemn the people that they did those things. But I know that these kinds of things could cause these kind of tzars. And I see the tzar in front of me. And I know that that could be caused by X, Y, and Z. Then I get much more of a solace for X, Y, and Z, seeing in front of my eyes what kinds of things could be caused by that. Why isn't that a solace? It doesn't have to be 100%. I just know this is a possibility. Now I see the Torah. It's not just theoretical. It's Alamaisa. I see that Torah. I know that that kind of Torah could have been caused by something like this, right? So the fact that I see a Torah, I see what the result. this kind of thing could be. It would be just horrible. Why not? Okay. I have it down here, Taka. The Kreishman was the other god that gave it to somebody who got up at a shimcha or some kind of meeting and made such a statement. That unless you're a Navi, you can't say for sure, and therefore it's only, like I'm saying, there's a chizik for the future, not for something in the past. Okay. And that is also the idea of your fashbish b'maisa. Don't try to look for other people to blame. Look only for what you can take out of it personally. And if it's a tzibur, a generation, then the generation should look, and the leaders of the generation, what that generation can take out of it for the future. Not why somebody else caused it or whatever. Look for what you can take out of it that's more you, your part in it. Not somebody else's part. I've explained many times that's yifash b'ish b'maisa and not b'maisim shalachere. Okay, so that at least gives us an entrance into what we're going to speak about, causes of Holocaust. But again, we have to speak about it in the context that we said. One is that we're speaking within the confines of this room, and I know everyone here. And everyone here are maminim and can take it properly. To repeat this outside to people who are not maminim is not what one should do. This is not, you know, public things that can be said publicly to the wrong people. I don't know even therefore if this should be on the internet, except that anybody's going to look up my website on the internet probably believes in something. Right? Not doing it because I'm so handsome or whatever. So Mishnah and the people are there want to hear or will take it in some kind of proper context. And also that we're not chas v'shalom condemning, accusing the people who died in the Holocaust. They're anoshim kedoshim. We don't know who they were, what they did or whatever. That's up to the Rabban Shalom. But we're doing it for our own sake to know that since these kinds of things could cause tragedies of this magnitude, then if we understand such a tragedy, use that as a chizuk not to do these things, to stay far away from the things that are mentioned. Okay, next week we'll start with some other dais, first of all, that disagree with this, that Eino Chanami say you can't find causes for the Holocaust, you shouldn't even look for them, and then we'll see, according to those Gedolim, not like that, what were some of the causes that were mentioned, and we'll discuss them over the next few weeks.